Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rick Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk Rumble. No one's live.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I am El Fakador Laurie Blake and I am joined by housemate Simon Longdon.
Hello.
Hello. Did you watch the James Bond trailer yet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And what do you make of it?
What's
it called, the film?
Time to Die.
Die.
No Time to Die.
Die Not Now.
No Time to... No.
No tie-dye. No tie-dye.
Yeah.
No freaking hippies.
I think it looks great.
Yeah, I really like the trailer. I thought it was cool.
I've always liked Craig as Bond. I like the fact they've experimented with the sort of form of Bond movies as well. Like I really liked Skyfall. I know a lot of people don't like Skyfall.
Oh, I really like Skyfall.
And I like
Quantum of Solace. Not so much.
That was the second one.
Yeah, that was the one where they go to the big like shiny building in the desert.
Oh yeah, yeah. I wasn't crazy about that one, to be fair.
And then he's
like,
"Oh God, she's." Jet.
Yeah, yeah. Casino Royale.
Casino Royale is a banger. Yeah.
Although when I watched it. It was on like last Christmas, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of them. I feel like it's a Christmas movie now, but it is about half an hour too long.
Mm-hmm.
At the end is sort of you could do a lot of the. There's a lot of stuff towards the end that you could kind of cram into 10 minutes.
The stuff towards the end is where they're like, well, it needs to be a bit more James Bond now because we've done the sort of like. The thing that James Bond films, I think, never really did before Daniel Craig was like really hone in on the espionage element of it as like actual espionage rather than just like, well, no, this is just what you're doing is high level flirting, which is what most James Bonds were doing before that when they were like going to casinos and schmoozing people. They were always trying to like find someone to shag, essentially.
Yeah.
And I thought the Daniel Craig sort of side of things was like, you know, building it all around this kind of high stakes poker game and the kind of dynamic at the table in that I thought was genius.
Yeah. It wasn't like you think back to the Brosnan movies, they were really just quite standard action romps.
Mm.
I think to kind of go back to get a sort of muscular, sort of aggressive, hard-nosed Bond and then do a casino movie. I just thought it was really
it's a weird dynamic, isn't it? And I think the thing is about No Time to Die is it looks probably the most James Bond of all the Craig James Bond films to me from the trailer. Like it smacks of like, you know, there's all the sort of nods to Bondness of like Moneypenny and Q and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But then there's also like cars with guns in and
big
chases and helicopters and blah, 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 blah. Like it looks like a very modern take on a sort of like... traditional Bond film almost.
I need to watch it again, but I don't remember being particularly taken by Spectre. Not as a movie in whole, I really enjoyed the movie. But the way they tried to put over Blofeld didn't really work for me. But I do actually, but in theory, I really like the idea that this one guy has been the architect of all this
stuff
that's gone on with it.
I think he's And so he's in the trailer, right? For
Yeah.
He's now sort of weirdly the Hannibal Lecter kind of character. Like he's
I think it looks great.
Back for I thought it looked really fun. Anyway, we'll now get on to the bit where we talk about the wrestling on this wrestling podcast. And we're talking about NXT and reviewing that. And also talking about the idea of whether Keith Lee should just now become the NXT champion. Because we both kind of think he should.
Yeah, why not?
Here's the show. Rather than go through sort of one of the highlights of this NXT to start the show off, I thought we'd discuss what I feel was kind of the big talking point coming out of NXT is that Keith Lee seems like he's getting a really big push right now.
He does. And he definitely, the thing that's been teased now for the second week in a row is the Ciampa Lee. Yes, we're teaming now, but we are constantly sort of having these little stare downs and we're very much going after the same thing.
Yeah.
And it does seem that Lee is the logical choice.
Mm.
I think, well, here's things we know about WWE. They do everything 6 months too late.
Mm-hmm.
And they normally aren't very good at long-term storytelling. NXT tends and has trended to not do those two things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're obviously pushing this big December 18th, last show before Christmas. And if your long-term goal is Ciampa Cole at Mania,
mm-hmm.
then giving Lee a run now to give it back to Cole later so Lee can go up.
Yep. I can that
seems to be a logical thing to do booking-wise, but also What doesn't seem to have happened in this run and this gold rush thing that the Undisputed Era have been doing, there hasn't been until very recently is any kind of sort of really serious seeds planted for that in of itself to be a wrapped up narrative. The narrative of that seemed to end with them getting the gold.
Yeah.
And then essentially it's been a let's now just see how the cookie crumbles as to the next contenders. Yeah. Obviously, we're going to be one of these few guys, but let's see who's hot.
Yeah.
It's Keith Lee.
Well, it's weird, isn't it?
Because so strap the rocket to him and here we go.
It's strange, isn't it? Because it was last week that we were talking about Finn Balor sort of moving into the title pitch after he sort of announced himself for like his interest in the title when he first returned to NXT. Then he went heel. Then it was like building to a thing with Johnny, seemingly. Johnny was injured. Then it was like, well, it'll be Matt Riddle instead.
Yes.
And then it was, again, like last week, he was like, well, no, I'm now in the picture for the NXT title. The same time, that was right after Keith Lee had the War Games weekend, the Survivor Series weekend, being the last in the last two of the men's Survivor Series match, having the big face-off with Roman Reigns, having basically ended every single episode of WWE TV in the last month with him doing a big tope.
Yeah.
As like a kind of like, that's how we want to end the show. That's how we want these big brawls that we're doing to set up Survivor Series to go off air with Keith Lee doing something amazing. So I'm not saying that necessarily he should be the champion, because I think one of the things that NXT has done well, and like you were saying, is they've built long-term stories.
Mm.
And I think the story they're building is Champ is probably going to get screwed out of this title shot here. There'll be a title shot before Christmas. There's a takeover before Mania.
Mm-hmm.
Balor will be the challenger for that, maybe. And then there'll be the takeover at Mania weekend, and that will be Ciampa versus Cole.
Mm.
That's my kind of what I feel like their long-term booking is going to be. However, the notion of just putting the belt on Keith Lee now while he's molten hot is very appealing.
Also, I mean, again, a cautionary tale is that they've never really, like, I can't think of an occasion where
Kofi's the only one recently that they've just about put the belt on him just at the right time.
I mean, they didn't do it. Roman's a bad example.
They messed Braun. Up. Becky, they messed up.
Yeah, Braun they did it too late. Goldberg, famously, they did it way too late. I can't think of someone who's come in super hot like this in NXT and had this similar sort. Maybe Shinsuke. You know, there's been a few guys who've kind of come in. Samoa Joe kind of came in super hot and kind of got the title pretty quickly.
But I think those sorts of people, they already knew that that's what they were doing. I think
they had a defined trajectory before they turned up.
Keith Lee's been in NXT for years now and had like his storyline before they went live was literally before they went on to USA was literally I have nothing to do. And that was the story they were trying to tell with Keith Lee. So it's crazy the turnaround he's had now. And like I think like he was saying in so he. That in this episode of NXT, there's a big six-man tag match to finish off the show that Keith Lee's kind of the headline. I think he has the headline moments in. There is also a big face-off between him and the Undisputed Era, which is where he sort of... I think this is the first time in NXT that we sort of have seen, in the modern NXT at least, or the USA NXT, like, what is Keith's actual goal and purpose? Because yes. here he was like, I'm deciding which of the belts I'm going to take off you. And really, he's been sort of stuck as, you know, Ciampa's backup for a lot of it, or he's been in the Dijak feud, or they've been teaming together to take on the Undisputed Era. But yeah. That was really just a sort of thrown together.
Yeah.
That was just a really fun, big main event. Also, the North American title shot was with Roddy's.
And also in that moment... when he was judging as to which belts he would take. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I thought he was going to not choose Adam Cole. I thought he might do tag or something, which, you know, the problem with that being that any wrestler given any kind of agency should want the top belt. End of story.
Yeah.
Well, so like, I'm glad they didn't fall into that trap.
You really should think you're good enough for it.
Yeah. So I'm glad they didn't fall into that trap. I just think right now, sometimes, I don't think they necessarily predicted this because like you said, Keith Lee's been there for a while and ultimately all they did was start televising what he was doing. That guy. I think it'd be interesting to see what they do with Dijak. Mm-hmm. Dijakovic, who they've sort of decided is American now. They keep this.
He was always American, but he's from like his family's from Croatia.
Right,
is kind of what they.
I mean, everyone's family's from somewhere.
especially, but Americans really like that. I think.
I think it's interesting that they've sort of. I thought they were really going the direction of pushing that tag team because I feel like that has been quite a. They've really hit that a lot.
Yeah, and we've brought that up a few times on chatting about this. On the review and said, like, I feel like those two guys are the ones to beat Fish and O'Reilly. But clearly, also, I think you've got to take into account that Fish is injured now.
Yeah.
So the tag belts are probably going to be undecided.
So this is what's interesting.
The undecided era for a little while.
So I think this is kind of what's happened. I think probably the plan was some kind of holding feud with Balor or Johnny kind of grasping for the belt. Like, I still end up in this sort of triple threat situation, still kind of do this booking, but and then have the tags and then the North Americans go either way. But because of the Fish injury and because of the Johnny injury, they've had to essentially tell the same story with different people slotting in. But coincidentally, during that time, Keith Lee got super hot and the Saudi Arabia situation happened and now suddenly we're having NXT in Survivor Series. That all happened very, very quickly. And just sort of panning for gold. Keith Lee has kind of come out of the bottom looking amazing and they've just sort of gone with it, I think.
And that's the thing.
You could see booking happening on air, basically. Yeah,
and part of, like, why wouldn't you go with it now? I think my argument is, like, if there was ever a time to just ditch your plans and do something that's going to shock people, it might just be put the belt on Keith Lee because he can do everything that he does everything Braun Strowman does as a sort of larger man character, but infinitely, like he said, gif-able. Like, the most viral gif. He does half of what Ricochet can do. And he's amazing on the microphone. Like, you've got...
And he's got great entrance music.
You're basically... I think they're sitting on somebody who is one of the stars that people always say that WWE doesn't have anymore.
Yeah, and I think giving him the strap now means that what they can quite quickly do is kind of give him... Now, maybe not long-term, this is a bad example, but... kind of give him the Kevin Owens push. Whilst he's got the belt, whilst he's legitimized, whilst he's still remembered in the eyes of the wider audience, make him do a surprise appearance on some rules.
Beat someone
established. Beat someone big, establish, come back down, have a feud, drop the belt, go up. And that's it. You can do that in a couple of months. You know, we've seen, like, Drew McIntyre is a good example of that as well. Like, just legitimize him with the belt, have him look great, have him drop the belt in a great match, and just move on. Mm-hmm. You know, NXT, you know, let's not call it developmental, but ultimately, it does still sit and exist to create and be the start of the conveyor belt for new champions. And also, when you look at what Ciampa said in that interview, where he said he wants to stay in NXT. Mm-hmm.
He's going to be around to win that
belt. Perfect.
For plenty of time.
Ciampa is now the guy who you can legitimately give the belt to, have him drop it and get it back again, and be the guy to see off the next crop of people. Like, it's all working out weirdly well.
Yeah. Smashing a bottle of champagne over their taxi.
Yeah, exactly.
Fairly well.
He's the guy to pass the torch. Mm-hmm. I think this is all... Yeah, this seems to me
the
logical...
happiest accident.
Yeah. Now, they might not do it.
No.
And I'm not necessarily against them not doing it. It's not that I don't actually have any particular preference. I don't know. I think they'll all be ultimately fine. I'm doing something in the next 6 months anyway. So
any combination of Ciampa, Balor, Cole, or Lee with a title would suit me to the ground.
Yeah.
However, I just think... Yeah, I do just think putting it on Lee, you could just... like, completely legitimize a star and just be like, he's now the biggest thing in WWE.
Yeah. Oh, and he could be.
Because you're so nearly on the cusp of that.
It obviously helps that he's massive. Mm. And that genuinely does help, I think. Mm-hmm. I think, let's be realistic about the expectations of certain people in upper management.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they have clearly shown that they are, I mean, they work, to be fair. Adam Cole has been getting a lot of shine. So I think if you're looking at who is going to be, at least post-Mania, probably quite high up the totem pole on Raw and SmackDown, Cole and Lee seem to be the two.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Riddle was still in NXT for another year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he hasn't quite had that big moment. Yeah, and it's more of a case that it's just not been his turn.
They were keeping him sweet, and then they just sort of went, ah, well.
It's just not been his turn. It's just, you know, these things are cyclical and often nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. You know, you just have to keep doing your thing, and his time will come. But the way things have fallen, I do think the best thing to do would be, like, strike while the iron's hot, give him the belt, and give the Undisputed Era something else to do as well. Yeah.
Because also Cole will be fine. I think Cole Cole also has had the craziest month of somebody's career that you could probably...
He must be knackered.
He must be so tired. He must be so like, please just take the belt. I don't want to defend it anymore.
I mean, like, Kushida's just come back from 2 months with a broken wrist. I'm pretty sure Cole is still wrestling with a broken wrist.
There's no promo package of Cole being like, push you on the swings, let's go down a slide.
Can we get a promo package of Cole on a roundabout? We can get Cole on a spinny roundabout with Kushida's baby.
let us know in the comments, actually, what you think of Keith Lee and whether putting the belt on him now would be the right time to do it. Clearly, like, storyline-wise, it's probably not the right time. However, just in capturing a moment... Maybe this could be...
Sometimes you just got to do it.
This could be a Becky Lynch-style thing, and you could just strike while the iron's hot.
Sometimes you just got to do it. And these things, you can always go back to the previous plan in a few months' time.
Exactly.
No one's going to... No, they're all really over.
Mm-hmm.
They'll all be fine, but if one of them's super hot, just go with it.
I just kind of think Keith Lee's the most over.
That's what I mean. That's exactly
what I mean.
That
is the big thing, is that I just think he... just might be one of the most over.
They are the crowd regularly chants for him no matter what's happening on the show. And not in a bad way, I don't think. Not in a sort of destructive CM Punk chant way, but just in a when stuff that is related to
that he might appear. Yeah.
It is getting a lot of reaction. I think you just have to go with it.
Thank you. Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, let's go through this episode of NXT blow by blow, bit by bit, because there's a lot of Keith Lee in there, but there's also a lot of other good stuff. So Mauro Ranallo was back at the beginning of the show. There was also a recap package of last week.
And by the way, just as I predicted on the Wrestling Extra News the other day, absolutely no fanfare for Mauro.
No.
He's just back, and that's just basically
I feel like they even took Beth Phoenix and Nigel McGuinness away from like standing next to him at the beginning to be like, well, there's no one going to be like, welcome back now. It's just Mauro.
Mentioned that he was never
unless
there.
Unless he was going to welcome himself back.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Just be like, screw you, Corey. Yeah. The show kicked off. Mauro said hi. Killian Dane was already sort of in the background, moping around the ring. He said that Damian Priest wasn't going to come out. Damian Priest was announced last week as being in a match with Killian Dane, but Damian Priest also was said to have possibly two cracked ribs in a little backstage vignette with the doctor. He said the Priest isn't going to come out, so he's not leaving the ring until somebody else does. Pete Dunne comes out. Yeah. So we're back sort of, I don't know, I feel like that's maybe a holding pattern for these guys.
Yeah, to be honest, when they started having they did that really great bit where kind of Priest kind of got taken out, and then, so, you know, he was kind of fodder so that Killian Dane could attack Dunne a few weeks back. And then as they were leaving, he just got involved. And I really loved that. I've not really seen that. Often doesn't happen in those sort of run-ins and stuff. And I thought, oh, this is actually really cool. Like, and I was really engaged in this sort of feud that was developing. And then it's just sort of happened on TV and it's sort of done.
Well, it's one of those,
an odd blow-off.
It's one of those weird things where, because the feud was building, I think the feud was kind of building to that triple threat for War Games. But then that became about getting a title shot because they needed a match for Adam Cole at Survivor Series that had to be done at the last minute. Then that was Pete Dunne doing that. And that kind of earning your way to a championship opportunity feels like you're pretty much done with the feud.
Yes.
I don't know.
I know what you mean, it did feel
like the finale. So I was a bit like, oh, Pete Dunne cares about this again. However, it was a perfectly fine match.
Stylistically, I don't quite understand why we've seen these guys, you know, for over a month now, they've not even been able to have a match for all the destruction they're causing each other. You know, interferences, you know, outside brawls, whatever, all this stuff going on. And the blow-off is a quite technically astute wrestling match. You know, similar to when Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins were supposed to have their big crazy fight. And then they had a wrestling. Then they had a wrestling match. So I don't stylistically. I was really looking forward to it. I was like, oh great, we're going to get this match. Mm-hmm. This will be fun. I feel like it should have been on a takeover. Could have become something bigger. And I don't quite know why they just had a sort of, again, really good, but I don't. I kind of wish they had more of a fight than a.
Yeah,
than a wrestling clinic.
It was a fine clinic, and there was a lot of fun stuff in there. Like there was a bit where they kept teasing Dunn doing a German suplex on Dane, and then he finally does it. And everyone's like, "Wow, that man is strong." I thought the craziest spot was Dunn does this big tornado DDT, hits the double stomps, kicks him in the head. He rolls outside, does the moonsault onto Dane on the outside, but then Dane just sort of picks Dunn up and dumps him on the apron.
Yeah.
Does a big senton, then he does the cannonball spot that he's been doing into the steps. Which just looks awful. That's what he did to take out Dane in one of their like post-match brawls on NXT TV a while
ago. He looks like, you know when Foley used to get thrown into the steps and he would always do like the flip over? Mm-hmm. He basically just sort of does that into the steps. Like he sort of half falls over and just ends up sort of on top of them in a pile. It just looks brutal every time.
It's a wicked little spot. And then the finale comes as they sort of do... Dane goes for a Vader bomb. Dunn catches him in a guillotine. Dane picks him up, set out a power bomb. They end up sort of on the turnbuckle because Dunn's trying to stop him doing another Vader bomb. Gets him in a big sleeper, and Dane decides, well, the best way to break this sleeper is if I just fall now.
Yeah.
Falls, squashes Dunn, but he's also slightly groggy from the sleeper hold, so he just collapses on top. 1, 2, 3, Dane's the winner.
Yeah.
It was
good.
It was
I really enjoyed it.
I liked the callback in the end of the match as well. So that was sort of like Dane diving off of something with Dunn attached to him was the finish to their War Games match, where Dunn was clever enough to then quickly cover Priest, who'd been jumped onto, and sort of steal the victory. But here, obviously, without someone else, Dunn becomes the cropper.
I think it would have been cool if, because it was supposed to be like, I'm not leaving till by the end of this night, we would have had a total, including Raw, of 5 different people saying they're not going to leave a ring before unless they have a fight. It's a lot of that happening in WWE. I mean, the hostage count of wrestling rings is going through the roof. But I would have thought it'd be cool if, as Dunn came out, if he suddenly like snapped and just ran and met him on the ramp, had a bit of a brawl, then got into the ring and had exactly the same match they already had. But I just think they needed to do something to sort of acknowledge that they have more anger at each other than was sort
really
of displayed.
Really, all you got was Dunn sort of throwing his jacket at Dane, like
which did get a big ooh. I was like, I think that's quite the aggression.
It's a little bit schoolyard.
Yeah, these guys were killing each other 3 weeks ago.
Dakota Kai was then seen backstage with Kathy Kelly. She said she gave Rhea what she wanted. Ruin Tegan Nox tonight. She's going to show her she says tonight I'm going to take her out just like I did with that hood rat.
That hood rat.
But this is her confession. This is the first clue in the mystery of who beat up Mia that anyone's ever bothered to pay attention to. No one has been investigating this.
No, I know.
And then
it's
Dakota
really
just
weird.
Like, I did it.
Well, because in the match later on, it gets mentioned. Yeah. And I went, oh, is that what she meant? I was like, so that is just what happened now. That massive moment is just sort of gone by.
A pithy one-liner in a stage segment.
I feel like
it's so weird they weren't mentioned. Like, because I get the Tegan Nox thing was such a big deal. And that obviously is kind of what you want to concentrate on in the story, because that was such a brutal beatdown. And that's why, you know, Dakota Kai later is coming out with Tegan Nox's death playing in the background. but you also want to acknowledge the fact that, like, you know, maybe hint a little bit more that Mia Yim's going to be annoyed at Dakota Kai because it was Dakota Kai who attacked her.
Yeah.
But then I guess, like, it's weird because Mia also didn't know that. Because Dakota was stood right next to Mia on the night of War Games, being like, oh, are you okay? In her like NWO gear that she was wearing, and then she put her in the ambulance, slammed the door and was like, I'm in the match.
But
like, it's kind of odd that this was just sort of this weird throwaway moment to build to what was quite a hot return and beatdown angle.
I know what you mean. It was a bit strange. And also, it was because the hood rat thing was mentioned a few times. There's definitely been a lot of Googling in the script department to make sure that's okay to say.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? And I'm still not sure.
I'm not
100%.
I'm not
100% sure.
Yeah, but they took some other words out of the first draft. Yeah. So they were like, is this one okay?
Yeah, they're referencing several things about Mia Yim there. And I'm not sure how comfortable they should all necessarily be. But hey, It's out. I didn't say it.
So next, the Undisputed Era came out. Bobby Fish not with them because he's injured. Cole said that Undisputed Era took over Raw and SmackDown, embarrassed all the guys at Survivor Series. They're the Iron Men of NXT and need to be repaid properly. He then puts over the fact that he says that they haven't been repaid properly. He's been ragdolled into the crowd by Keith Lee, and I'm not a ragdoll. And then he says that Finn Balor betrayed him as well and turned on him with a Pele kick at the end of last week's NXT. They say, we're not leaving this ring.
No.
Until Finn Balor gets out here and explains himself.
Hmm.
Well, Finn ain't coming.
No.
Keith Lee turns up.
Yeah.
Keith Lee comes out. Kyle says to him, you're just a moment maker. You faced off against Roman Reigns and you lost. You did the big pounce that was the gif last week. But what have you actually achieved? And he says, oh, sorry, I was actually just deciding which of your championships I wanted to take off you.
Mm. Is this after Kyle O'Reilly called him a loser?
I love Undisputed Era's put downs. My favourite one is
so
the War Games one that Roddy Strong does, where he like leans over the ropes and he goes, feast your eyes, dork! They're incredible.
That's so funny. Kyle O'Reilly is like their petulance is so funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just their act is so refined.
It's one of
now.
Those it's things great. That's like it's the AJ thing as well. Of just like, I'm going to say something a bit dry and a bit silly and a bit naff, but I'm going to do it with such conviction.
Yeah.
That it gets over and like feels like I'm actually being quite mean, even though obviously calling somebody a loser isn't actually like a well-written.
Yeah. And didn't he do a pun as well? He did a really bad pun. Oh, what did he say? I can't remember what the pun was now. It was like momentarily or something like that.
Oh, momentarily. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. It just like it didn't even make sense.
It's just a lot of fun. And then so like they attack Lee after he says he's going to take one of the championships off them. He manages to fight all of them off on his own, basically. Cole then starts to try and sort of run away up the ramp. Ciampa jumps him. They then run off the Undisputed Era into the crowd, leaving Ciampa and Lee in the ring. Ciampa then picks up the NXT championship, which has been left behind, Goldie, which I don't even think he's touched.
No.
Since his return. And this gets such a big response in the crowd. The moment where he's like leaning there and he picks it up, everyone's going like, Daddy's home! Daddy's home! But I thought this was a good little mirror for the end of the episode as well.
Mm.
We'll sort of come back to when we get to the main event and stuff. But this moment where Ciampa's holding the belt and Keith Lee's the one sort of like having his moment stolen almost by Ciampa's interference here, because it's Ciampa's music playing, Ciampa's holding Goldie. But Keith Lee fought off the Undisputed Era.
Mm.
And I just think it's an interesting parallel. But more on that later. We then saw Xia Li backstage, who said she was going to take on Shayna Baszler and show her that she's a warrior.
Did a sweet kick at the camera.
Hi-ya.
I think they should have zoomed out for that. It was a bit sort of like, ooh, that was a foot.
It was sort of like here, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And like some of the crowd went, ooh. I was like, I don't think that deserved a no.
it was a perfectly fine promo to remind us that, yes, Xia Li was involved in the Shayna Baszler thing last week.
Yeah.
We then got the Kushida promo package where he was saying that he's been off with his injured wrist for 2 months and spent a lot of time with his family, and he's doing this for love, which I thought was nice.
Yeah, which is, he's now the fifth or sixth guy who's sort of done this for the love of his family. That's a bit,
he should be doing,
it's a bit old hat.
He should be doing this to get his almanac back, is what anything.
I just think, yeah.
To get back to his own time.
I feel like he's just so obviously a babyface anyway. I don't think we need to necessarily, that was like Roddy's gimmick when he first turned up. It's very white meat babyface. I just don't think it's that interesting.
No, and it didn't work for Roddy, I don't think either.
No, it didn't. He didn't do it. Yeah,
Roddy, like in my head, I didn't really like Roddy until Roddy turned heel.
Yeah, same here.
Then we got Xia Li versus Shayna Baszler, where she was going to show her what a warrior she was. This was mostly sort of like a stand-up MMA-style striking contest for most of it until Baszler grounded the action and started doing all of her I'm going to stretch your arms out and stamp on them things. Xia Li showed a bit of guts, but ultimately just sort of came a cropper when she missed her kick and Baszler was like, Kira Fuda clutch.
Yeah. I really liked this match. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
Had it, I thought it was again, that really good sort of not quite a squash, but very obviously dominating win. Do you know what I mean? Like it put Zaire over. She's getting a proper push the minute. I think she's really good. There are some moments that still look a little bit too
scripted.
We're going through a list of moves in our head. But I mean, I mean, that happens a lot in
matches. That happened at the Survivor Series main event.
Yeah. It happens again in another match last night as well, which we'll get to.
But I thought this was perfectly fine. It was the right thing to do before you're going to make something of Baszler later in the evening.
Yeah,
like, she needed this little win to just be like, remember who the champ is, because she had a good night on Survivor Series, but a bad night on the TakeOver.
Yeah. And I was kind of against her having the match. It was last week, wasn't it? She had a match. Or was it the week before? Shayna had another match, didn't she?
Against?
I can't remember who it was against now. Or was it? Yeah, anyway, a couple weeks ago, she's had a match on TV sort of fairly recently. Like, maybe it was the week before War Games, she had one. And I was kind of against her having matches on TV. I was like, no, she's got a lot of mystique.
Yeah.
You know, but actually, I sort of changed my mind on that one now. I think actually, because of her style, and because you've sort of actually, because they've actually built up Xia Li very quickly quite well, I thought it actually kind of makes sense to have her just come in and just kick some ass on screen for a bit.
Yeah, and I think it's clever as well, because she chooses people further down the card.
Yes.
So she's not like, you know, Rhea wants the match, but she's like, well, Xia Li just gets a random match tonight.
Yeah.
Whatever. Like,
yeah.
I really like what
I liked
doing.
It.
Yeah. I like what they're doing with Shayna Baszler. I think it's smart to keep making her look dominant, because also Rhea Ripley is so over that you don't want Baszler to get lost in that.
No, exactly. Like, and I think they're doing a really good job of making Baszler continue to look like a hellish heel. Like,
yeah,
she looks so strong.
And that match is going to be so hot when they do it. Like,
yeah,
it'll
be great.
I think it's going to be great. We then saw Cassius Ohno arriving at Full Sail, who said he's no longer the knockout artist. He's a wrestling genius. He's had a career renaissance over in NXT UK and is the best wrestler in...
The best British wrestler of all time is Cassius Ohno.
Wrestler of all time. This was kind of a promo for Worlds Collide as well, because he says Worlds Collide's coming up very soon, so I'm here to see if anyone wants a fight. We then got the Forgotten Sons versus Leon Ruff and Adrian Alanis from Evolve, who were squashed into Oblivion.
Talking of Oblivion, of course, so after the match, there was some Steve Cutler is... I think he's really cool.
I think the Forgotten Sons are underrated.
I definitely agree with that. I think they are underrated. But and then at the end of the match... Jackson Ryker picks up Leon Ruff, and chokes slams him through the ring, like just
over the top rope
through the apron. But like, man alive, like really hard. Basically, tried to throw him to the other side of the world.
Yeah,
that was. I presume he's dead.
You're the best wrestler in Australia now.
Yeah, yeah. I presume he's free falling through the center of the earth as we speak.
It was, that was nuts.
Yeah.
Nick Miller.
I just thought those weird things were like, he kind of went up at the crowd and were like, oh no. And then he threw him so hard that everyone actually kind of went, oh, no. Oh, God.
I was just like, this seems like a very... Oh, you're an indie star, are you? Greeting on WWE. Well, you're an indie star. You're going to have to take a bump.
You're going to have to take a choke slam from someone very green who's going to just bonk you on the side of the ring.
But this was like all the guys that ended up sort of doing all the jobber spots with the Bludgeon Brothers when they first appeared. And like, who was it? The screaming guy when they did their powerbomb combo.
Yeah, that was really funny,
This, I thought... those guys did really well to sell the Forgotten Sons as a legitimate threat. There was like a really fun little moment where it was just, I think it was Cutler was just chucking one of them. He was chucking Leon Ruff around the ring, just doing like beals and stuff. And then he just picked him up and chucked him into his own corner, which collided with Alanis, causing a tag.
Yeah,
a tag happened, and he was just like, "Well, you have to get in now." Yeah. And then they did their like stomp finisher, and then Ryker got involved. This was. I guess just setting up the Forgotten Sons as to sort of rebuild the tag division after I think it's been slightly gutted since Street Profits left.
Yeah, I think so.
Viking Raiders have moved on, the War Raiders. There needs to be
War Machine.
Yeah, there needs to be some sort of like actual feeling that there are tag teams here, because it is just currently Fish and O'Reilly.
Yeah, it does feel like I could imagine. I know he's getting a lot of rub at the minute, but I could imagine someone like Swerve getting put with someone, maybe sort of be like, when will the Dusty Classic happen?
Happened quite recently, so
yeah,
it was really
it's gonna be a, so they must now feels like a good time to start building some sort of broader division, like have a few sort of like random teams just thrown together just for that, or just to make it feel a bit.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think that's the benefit of the Dusty Classic, is that you can suddenly just make teams again.
Yeah.
It would be good if, like, when Johnny comes back, if Johnny and Ciampa did a little DIY run to just to revive the tag division. Mm. If you are gonna move him on from the NXT Championship picture for a bit because you've decided to go in a different direction.
Yeah.
Which you should go in a different direction. We then got Dakota Kai coming out to her new video package, which is just a black and white video of her beating up Tegan Nox.
Inappropriate funeral video.
Tegan Nox. Her holding the brace again. She gets in the ring ready for a match that she's meant to be having with Rhea Ripley. However, Rhea Ripley comes out with a mic and starts cutting a promo. She says, what you did at TakeOver War Games was very clever. And then I might have miswritten this, but she goes like, "Do you know what else is really clever right now?" It was something.
It
like
was.
That.
It was it no, was, no,
it
no.
Was quite a clumsy.
Yeah.
Sentence.
So she said. Yeah, your trick was very clever, but you know what else? You know what else is a trick?
Oh yeah.
Right now, it was. Yeah, it was like that.
Do you know what else is a trick right now?
Right now, it wasn't really a trick.
No.
It was all. I mean, this is kind of what. Similar thing that happened, I think, with the sort of expectation of when Pete Dunne came out, which is like, well, there is no other option. There is no surprise that can happen now. So it's sort of a weird thing to hold back and be like, huh? Well, wait till you see this. And it's like everyone in the room would just go, well, it's me, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and I guess my, like, I know I was saying earlier that the Mia Yim reveal could have been built to, but I guess...
The only other thing would have been Tegan Nox miraculously appearing.
I guess that's what they're going to build to, and they don't want to do that twice.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to do Mia Yim build up to, like, Mia Yim's going to be pissed when she comes back, and then Mia Yim comes back, and Dakota Kai and Mia Yim have a little feud, and then so, like, it's like, well, but Tegan's going to be even, well, like, you keep using her video.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just think, yeah, you don't want to, maybe you don't want to screw the pooch on that one. You want to just go like, well, we'll just bring Mia back when she's ready, and then we'll do the big build to Tegan's reveal. Like,
yeah. Was it me and Yumi got the ladder in the face, wasn't it?
Yeah.
From who kicked the ladder?
Who was in that match? It was Kaylee Ray.
Kaylee Ray, that was it. Because I said, what?
No, sorry, Kaylee Ray interfered at the end of the match. So it was actually, it was either Belair or Io Shirai. It was Io Shirai.
Io Shirai, that was it. So the thing that slightly confused me is because me and Yumi has both been mysteriously attacked ages ago without mention, but then recently got her face smashed in. And I sort of... That I took a few moments for me to kind of calculate when the commentary was kind of like, and, you know, Mia Yim got taken out. I was thinking, what, by that ladder that she got? Like, do you mean it was like, it's not their fault.
She got taken out by that ladder, and then she did the whole rest of the match, and then she got put through the other ladder by Kaylee Ray. And then at the beginning of War Games, it was kind of suggested that it might have been the other team who beat up Mia.
Yeah.
And then it was Dakota Kai does her big heel turn. And now we're getting the information.
Yeah.
That it's like, oh, and Dakota was also behind Mia Yim. Yeah. It's like, what, somebody tell me.
Like, Mia Yim essentially was out for the same period of time, but for three different reasons. Yeah. I was having to be like, oh, God, what are they referencing now? Like, that was a bit confusing.
But Mia Yim makes a big return here. So she's the now.
She's the now reveal. And the trick.
She runs out on this trick that she's doing. She beats the crap out of Kai. Mm. She runs around the ring. She's doing a lot of Kai's moves as well. She does like the big running boot in the corner, and then she does the sort of like short holding the head kicks that she does. Kai fires back a little bit, but then Mia starts chucking her around into the barricades and then runs her into the back. As she's sort of running her into the back, Rhea's then shown at ringside like, oh, that's a lot of fun. I enjoyed watching that. As Shayna Baszler and the other horsewomen come out, rush down to the ring. Duke and Shafir do the classic, we're going to go ahead and get beaten up. Baszler comes in behind, starts fighting them off. I really liked the storytelling of this, that the Rhea was quite competent against the two of them.
Yes.
And then the inclusion of Baszler, slightly delayed, made it all work. She locks in the Kirifuda clutch. Rhea backs her into the corner and gets out of it. She locks it in again. Drops to the floor, and then Rhea manages to stand with Baszler on her back, and then she locks in one final time. And this is when Rhea crawls to the ropes, tries to haul herself up using the middle rope, but Duke and Shafir grab her arms. And this, an amazing visual, I thought this was, where they pull back, and it's Duke and Shafir yanking the arms as Baszler's choking her out. And Rhea starts to fade, drags her right into the center of the ring, and lets her go when she's completely unconscious.
Yeah, it was really cool. When the Mia Yim Dakota Kai stuff was happening, I was kind of thinking, oh, this is a bit odd. This you know, the crowd are becoming very sympathetic towards Dakota Kai, who is essentially now being handicapped. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, this is odd. And then when they went off, and then the rear stuff happened, I was like, oh, okay, this is actually really cool.
Yeah.
I really like this whole segment.
Yeah. It's kind of a weird shame that Dakota Kai's heel turn's been lost in...
I think that's a slight shame, is that her... For some reason, the crowd wasn't quite ready to see her just get her comeuppance way. I think there could have been something more made of that turn. I think she's now got a bit of a task ahead of her to kind of get heat. Because she did, like, there was a point in the crowd where the crowd were sort of on her side.
Yeah.
Because of what was happening. Because ultimately, they can only react to what they've been presented to. What they represented was two supposedly faces.
Tricking someone
into essentially what looked like a 2-on-1.
Yeah, and it wasn't a match, it was just a beatdown.
Yeah, so that was... I understand why it was a means to an end.
Yeah.
But I do think now that, yeah, they're gonna have a little bit of... They've set up, obviously, Mir and Dakota, but now Dakota... Like, you know what's annoying? Now Dakota should beat up Mir Yim backstage.
Yeah.
Now she needs to attack her.
I think that's the point, isn't it? It's here, Mir Yim should have made her return, and Dakota should have... Like, the reveal of Dakota being the attacker in the first place... Maybe should have been Mia Yim makes a triumphant return. She gets booked in a match. Dakota comes out with a knee brace and starts wailing on her and goes, "I'm the one who did this to you before." And then you position Dakota as quite a strong heel if that's what you're going for, and that's when you build to the Tegan Nox return.
Yeah,
I don't know. I still liked this.
Yeah,
this
segment. So did I. Yeah.
I thought it was really fun. I thought it was a really good way to hype Baszler and Rhea. Makes Rhea look strong in the sort of she won't quit. Austin vibe.
Ripley.
But then also makes Baszler look like smartest champ alive. Yeah. Very dominant force. And also then Baszler gets a microphone at the end of this segment and she says, like, you wanted a title match. You don't even know what you're asking for because I also want a title match and I'm going to get one and with you on December the 18th. So sleep tight.
I think also week by week, the Shafir and... I always forget the other ones.
Jessamyn Duke,
that's it. Week by week, they are getting better at stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought they actually looked legitimately... It really looked like they were a actually mean, devastating group when they want to turn the heat up on someone. I just thought it was... This whole week has been just... This whole episode really... I think Shayna... was really put over really well this whole episode. She looks like absolutely just the pinnacle. She's the big bad. Mm-hmm. She really does feel like that now.
Yeah.
Even on her own, not just because, like, I like the dynamic where it's like, yes, these two are there to kind of soften them up. But they're hyenas.
Yeah.
And she's the it's great. I really enjoyed it. It was really cool.
We then saw Kathy Kelly with Tommaso Ciampa. They said they needed the third man. Surprise, it's Dijakovic.
Yeah.
Finn Balor then does...
Again, is that the third non-surprise surprise of the evening?
Finn Balor then says that everyone else is playing checkers while he plays chess. Checkmate, which obviously if you're playing checkers, you don't understand.
Yeah,
so
true,
I guess it was a fine little promo package. We then got one for Swerve as well, which again just made him look really good. Cassius Ohno then makes his way to the ring for his match against anyone who'll answer the call.
Worst t-shirt you've ever seen?
Yeah, it's bad.
Not great, is it?
Ohno's gear has always been bad in WWE, though.
Yeah.
Like, he's had really terrible gear.
Mm.
Really, really,
yeah.
Really terrible. Mm. It's unflattering.
It does
nothing for him.
Yeah.
And then Matt Riddle comes out in his gear looking like sweet psychedelic sweets from...
He looked like Bruno.
He gets the Goldberg Riddle chance, and they actually had a really fun,
really
match.
Good match.
I really enjoy this. They're like, Riddle did all of his kind of usual spots in a slightly different order, like going for the big German, goes for the Broton and the backflip, but he gets tripped. Ohno goes outside. Riddle quickly jumps the ropes, catches him on the other side, and does his huge penalty kick on the apron, which I thought was really cool. I loved Ohno doing just continually going back to the weird cravat that he kept doing.
Yeah,
he just been like, and cravat.
And Nigel McGuinness constantly referencing all these different older sort of British wrestlers and European wrestlers, whatever, who he was like, it's almost like,
who he was imitating.
Yeah, I thought it was really, really cool. There was, I just think Matt Riddle should use the jackhammer as his finisher.
Mm.
I don't think his whatever the bro.
Apparently, he did a progress show recently. It was him and Keith Lee tagging against someone, and the first thing Riddle did when he came out was he just hit a spear and a jackhammer.
I think it should be his finisher. He's big enough and strong enough to do it. It's a great reference. Nobody else is doing it. Mm. You know, I guess Keith Lee is sort of doing his own version of the jackhammer. But I just don't think the bro Derek is a very... He's got other very devastating looking moves. Yeah. His finisher is quite weird.
I think the final flash knee looks better than the bro Derek.
Yeah, and he's used that as a finisher. Then, like, it's funny to see. I feel like sometimes NXT guys, they have a sort of TV finisher and a PPV finisher.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? I'm not a big fan of the bro Derek. There was a weird moment in this match where... And I don't know whether it was just a sort of weird timing thing or chemistry thing, but there was like a 30-40 second chunk of like chain wrestling stood up, and it just looked like they were gassed. Like, it went really slow.
This was the finish, right?
Yeah,
this
went really slow down. Oh, that was a bit odd.
Well, so this was after, so they did like, there was a really crazy bunch of spots where Riddle does his senton, he misses the backflip, Ono goes for his toes, holds his toes.
Oh, that was great.
Starts bending him, and then Riddle hits a big knee to get out of it. He does the bro to sleep, the power bomb, flips him over, knees him in the face, and then hits the floating bro, and Ono still kicks out. Yeah. That was awesome. Like, what a stretch. Like, because I think Riddle does that really well as part of just like his performance of just, I am now just going to hit 10 moves in a row.
Yeah.
And they're all going to be increasingly devastating.
He basically like hot tagged one guy.
Yeah. Off his toes.
Yeah. It was cool seeing Ono actually also not necessarily just emptying his basket of tricks.
Mm-hmm.
I do like how he really, you know, he has changed his game to be like he's saying it. He's not just
genius.
Where he kept screaming when he was doing something like really what he thought was good, you know. Like, I don't know, I really enjoyed that, apart from that weird slowdown bit, which I just thought was seen. I think they just sort of missed one move and were just trying to reset. Yeah. But so like, sort of it was
out,
so fun.
Yeah, I feel like they were maybe trying to do something else. I don't know, because McGuinness puts over the Carl Gotch lift that Ono goes for and doesn't quite get him up. But the Carl Gotch lift is obviously the same lift that Riddle uses for the bro Derek. So it was nice sort of like
mirroring,
symmetry that they use there. But then, it was the sort of like, oh, I'm doing, no, knee strike, bro Derek.
Yeah,
and it was all done. And so Riddle picks up the win. That's a really fun little match, I thought. Like, I don't mind that maybe there's not really much for Riddle to do now that he's lost to Balor, and he just comes out and has fun matches with fun people, and they're silly and they're entertaining. That's the benefit of having a two-hour show, is that not every match has to make sense
and
for
also,
the story.
And also, he's super over. He's still considered in that top tier with that sort of loose connection with those other guys. He's absolutely fine. He's just the way things have just fallen right now, he's just not involved in, and that's fine. I don't think he's lost any shine. I don't think he's lost anything. I think he's probably going to be, seems to me he's probably going to lead the charge for NXT Worlds Collide.
Yeah,
you know, he'll be the big name.
Yeah, and if NXT is getting a big push still off the back of that, they'll probably pick up victory there.
Yeah, I don't think he's
because also
lost
Worlds
anything.
Collide last year, the winner of Worlds Collide, Velveteen Dream, got a title shot of his choice.
Yeah.
He chose the North American Championship.
Yeah, incorrectly, but he did choose the...
Should have chosen the top belt. Maybe there was a like the little TNC was like not the top one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe you take on Walter. You never know.
Never know.
It was made official that the Women's Championship match will be happening on December the 18th. I feel like both companies, NXT and AEW, are going for really big December the 18th. I can't remember exactly what was booked on AEW, but it seems like they were setting up a couple of big matches for that night.
They got a tag title match.
NXT is going to be having the women's championship match and the men's NXT championship match. So that's like a pretty exciting...
One of those belts is changing hands.
Something's happening, yeah.
I just think that's just what's going
to
happen.
Yeah. Something has to... Like, I feel like I think we've reached the point now where nothing has changed for a while in NXT, and it feels like... Maybe going into the break, going into Christmas, knowing that like coming back out like New Year, it's kind of a fresh slate somewhere in the division, because you don't want to start the New Year being like, well, it's just Undisputed Era and Baszler again.
Yeah, and we're essentially that starts, you know, now that the Rumble has kind of been moved forward into, that's been January now for
a while. January 27th, yeah.
Like now that's been think. That's
well, 26th, but yeah.
Now that's kind of slowly been moved slightly closer. It used to be. sort of end of Feb, I think, in my head. So it's like that's now really the big one at the start of the year. So WrestleMania season essentially starts Royal Rumble, doesn't it, really, in my head anyway. And NXT guys are going to be involved in that. Like, it feels like this is a chance to, like you say, do something big for the end of the year and give everything a bit of a shake up going into the, you know, give them some more options to start the year going to those going to the first takeover.
Yeah, because you don't want to just be building to all the titles change hands at that one WrestleMania takeover. Yeah. It was then scheduled to be Kushida versus Raul Mendoza, except Cameron Grimes stomped him into oblivion on the ramp. Cameron Grimes then took Raul Mendoza's place in the match. That stomp was brutal.
Yeah.
Like, the cave-in is a crazy move anyway. Yeah. So the big jumping double stomp thing that Cameron Grimes does. Love it.
Yeah.
And I thought this was a really fun sort of like, well, what about me kind of moment.
Yeah.
And I feel like these two might have a really good feud coming off the back of this match. Because it was a really short little sprint. Like, Kushida basically started the match really hot. He hit the sort of handspring to knock Cameron Grimes off the apron. Went up on the top turnbuckle, hit a rolling senton from the top turnbuckle to the outside, which was just nuts. People were just like, oh yeah, Kushida's back. He then did a bit of like, they did a really fun little spot where he tried to put the octopus on three times.
Yeah.
Which was just like, oh yeah, do you remember he does high flying and he's also really good at submissions?
Yeah.
Just so you're all aware. Cameron Grimes did a big German, does the backflip, goes for the other German, and then Kushida rolls through. Gets a 1-2-3, and it's a quick little win. Just to be like, Kushida's back, everyone.
Yeah, and also, I think interesting to have him go over, but with a roll-up, says to me more about Cameron Grimes than does about Kushida. Mm-hmm. Kushida has to get the win, but they're clearly also now starting to build with Cameron Grimes as well.
Yeah, so they've been like Cameron Grimes.
With the vignettes and
I feel
stuff.
Like that's like Cameron Grimes' first loss since the breakout tournament as well.
Yeah.
No, he lost to Tyler Bate, did he? No, he beat Did he beat Tyler Bate? He might have lost to Tyler Bate or Pete Dunne.
I
think it was Tyler Bate.
He's lost against people like he's been winning some squashes.
Yeah. I just think this match gave you just enough of a taste of like, well, these two have chemistry.
Yeah.
And I would like
to see
what they do like going forward.
Yeah.
So that I think that's a good little program to bring Kushida back into the fold. We then got the big six-man tag team match where it was Tommaso Ciampa, Keith Lee, Dominic Dijakovic versus Undisputed Heroes, Roddy Strong, Kyle O'Reilly, and Adam Cole. This was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
This was exactly what you thought it would be when you put all these bits in the ring. I think the main story of the match and the main thing they were trying to do was put over the people who will be challenging Adam Cole for the championship going forward. So it was like Dijak was really the tag partner who was there to be beaten down. Tommaso Ciampa comes in with one of the craziest hot tags I think I've ever seen. He comes in, double clotheslines, Strong and O'Reilly. He chucks Roddy Strong out. He hits a belly-to-belly on Kyle, who rolls into the ropes. He does his running knee in the ropes. He then grabs Adam Cole, who's trying to climb into the
DDT,
ring, and does the Widow's Bell DDT. He then hits Project Ciampa on Kyle and gets this really close two. I was just like, that is insane. It's just like,
that was awesome.
No, two finishes, goodbye.
Yeah, Ciampa's... He's so good. All these guys are great, and they've all been working together enough now. They've all got really great chemistry. Again, clearly, like they have done a few times now, really building up when is Keith Lee going to do a big thing? and that came with him rising into the camera shot towards the end.
Well, so this is the big finale of the match, right? So like they did a... And everyone ends up outside, basically. Dijak does a big spinning springboard dive onto the big pile of people.
Somehow missed most of them.
Yeah. You had to spin around. As they were climbing back in, Dijak ends up on the turnbuckle.
Looks like he's going to suplex.
With Kyle. And they're sort of fighting and people are sort of watching them. Finn Balor jumps into the ring, hits a running drop kick onto
everyone. He hits Cole into the ref, and the ref
he snookers the referee into everyone else in the pocket, and then sends all the balls scattering.
He hits ref into top pocket and takes out everyone else.
It was amazing. From there, he then hits a 1916 on Ciampa. It's Ciampa, yeah.
Yeah.
So he knocks everyone else out. He picks Ciampa up, hits 1916, and then he goes in the corner, does the finger guns. But as he's doing the finger guns to set up his drop kick, Keith Lee just...
It was such a great...
You forgot about Keith.
Yeah.
And was it.
It was, just great. camera work. Great spot.
But it was another, like, I think part of the reason that Keith Lee is getting over to the degree he is because they are doing these moments with him where they are going to be the shareable, gif-able thing to send around on wrestling Twitter. And that's what's so clever. Like, you know, I think that moment from last night is, you know, that's the thing that Ollie came into the office today and says, I haven't seen NXT, but I have seen that gif. Same thing last week. Haven't seen NXT, but I have seen that gif of him pouncing Adam Cole. And that, like, that, you know, there are moments like that about Keith Lee across the board now. So if they keep doing that with him, they are just going to make him the most talked about thing in NXT.
But the important thing with both of these moments is that not only were they, in their own meta way, funny and just cool and fun and referential, they also made sense, were taken seriously in the moment, you know, like they also totally justified themselves within the context of what was going on, not just as a sort of moment for the sake of doing it.
Yeah,
I think that's the key.
Didn't break character at any point.
I think that's the key. You know, it was a lot of fun, but it was also a necessary bit of storytelling.
Yeah. So as Keith Lee grabs Balor on the ropes, Balor sort of manages to squirm out of a choke slam or a choke hold. Lee gets in the ring. Balor goes for a sling blade. Sling blade gets caught, popped straight up into a spirit bomb, taken out of the match. Here's the point where you're like, well, the ref's down. Balor's interfered. He's not really done much, but he has caused a distraction because Adam Cole comes in, super kick to Keith Lee, and then goes for the last shot and then runs straight into Lee, who just goes, jackhammer.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3. I've pinned the NXT champion.
Yeah. Great.
It's a great setup. It was the right booking of the match to be like, look, Dijak, you're going to get this one moment, this one really big moment where he did that. He did his knee thing. And, the, you know, he goes to toss people. And he had Kyle O'Reilly. And then Roddy tries to trip him up. And he just bonks Roddy with Kyle. And then he battering rammed Cole off the apron with Kyle as well, which I just thought was great. But, yeah, like, Dijak really sort of had to take a back seat here because the story was, isn't Ciampa amazing? But isn't Keith Lee also amazing? And he's now pinned the champion. And now William Regal comes down because he says, on the 18th of December, Adam Cole is going to have to defend his NXT championship, and we need to decide who the number one contender is. So next week, it's going to be Finn Balor, and I thought Finn was great here on the outside, like, looking a bit pained, and he was just like, oh, yes, me. and then, and Ciampa, who was like, obviously. And Keith Lee.
Yeah. And then you get Keith Lee and Ciampa have another stare down.
Mm-hmm.
It was
But again,
great.
They're the only two in the ring at this point.
Yes.
Dijak is on the outside. The Undisputed Era are all scattered around the place. Keith Lee and Ciampa, again, in a mirror of what happened earlier, are left in the ring. But it's Keith Lee's music playing this time. And Keith Lee is the one getting the ovation. And Keith Lee is the one who now seems like he's in line to be the champion.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was really clever booking to be like, here's the moment from earlier. Here it is again.
Yeah.
Everything has changed.
Yeah. It was...
And I cannot wait for that match.
Yeah, I can't wait. This match was awesome. Mm-hmm. I love this match. It kind of had a bit of everything in it. I love the way the Undisputed Era were used as well. Mm-hmm. I like the moment where Dijak is so big and strong, it takes all three of them in a sort of conga line to drag him back into the corner. Like,
yeah.
I think what's interesting about them is that even in the place, NXT, where everyone talks about people being undersized, which is obviously completely contextual, so it's kind of a pointless thing to bring up. So, you know, even though I bring it up quite a lot. But, like, even so, they use the fact that their whole thing is we are this just gang of wily, petulant, angry little jackals who will just do anything to keep the advantage. I just think it could have been very hard for them to
continue to be booked against the likes of Keith Lee and Dijak, as they have been for the last 3 months.
And they've nailed it. And they've remained strong, remained looking good. You know, I just thought it was great. You know, everyone came out looking really strong. I think it's great to see, you know, Dijak is still getting the shine from this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Seems that they've kind of stopped, you know, quite quickly stopped saying that Keith Lee and Dijak are a team. They're just sort of mates now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just thought it was great. And I thought the stare down team, I clearly, you know, I think the triple threat is going to be amazing.
Yeah, I think this episode again just showed that NXT has a wealth of talent, and obviously like they can't do everything with everyone, but they've got so many good people now that you're just happy to see them come out and do something, and they don't necessarily feel at such a loose end that you're like, oh, there's just no hope for them. Like Matt Riddle, you're not sitting there going like, there's no hope for Matt Riddle after he lost to Finn Balor. You're still just like, well, Matt Riddle can just come out and be really over and have really fun matches that are a joy to watch, even if they feel like they're going nowhere. Whereas I think sometimes on Raw, especially, you get matches where it's like, this is meant to be that fun match, and it's a bit sloppy, or it's not very interesting, and it kind of doesn't really have a point to it. However, on the other end of the spectrum at NXT, you've got this sort of main event scene of like, eight dudes who are all having matches in different combinations. And every time they come together, they do something different and something interesting. And somebody else gets to look good. And you get to have these amazing moments that are the most shared bits of sort of wrestling paraphernalia on the internet. I thought this episode of NXT, like, I wouldn't say it was a five-star episode of NXT because it didn't have, like, that many amazing matches, and there was a few too many surprise, there's no surprise, moments. However, it was a really solid four-star episode for me. How about yourself?
I think I haven't really sort of, it's difficult for me because I haven't really got a grasp necessarily of NXT, what I think is like, what their version of a five-star episode is yet. But I thought it was, I just thought it was a great episode. I do think the only things, like you said, that hold it back from being a sort of truly great episode, it didn't have anything like insane happen during a match. It didn't have like this, that one crazy, what NXT often has is like a match you don't expect, is the crazy amazing match, you know, they've normally got one of those every week. That didn't happen this week. This felt more of a straight-laced narrative driven episode, but I thought overall everyone came out looking really strong.
And I'm liking where the narrative is going.
And I like where it's going. And I think they are just about, I do mean, they're just about getting away with it not feeling too top heavy. It wouldn't take much for it to go the other way, but I think...
We are just about have run the course of Undisputed Era having all the gold.
Because I think
it
so.
Is... meaning there could only really be one big story at once.
Yeah. I think the only place they can go now is that... I think the only place they can go now is the gold is so important to the group that whoever loses some gold is going to have to pay some sort of price, probably kicked out.
Yeah.
I think if you're going to do that, the only person you can do that with is Adam Cole, I think that's the biggest, you sort of, if you're going to do it, go all the way.
He's used to being kicked out, yeah.
And Roddy's kind of a late addition. The other two guys are tag, coming to kick two people out. I don't know, it feels, that seems to me like a, and you're like, no, they could even, like, I mean, I wouldn't like to see it happen because I think they've got such great chemistry and I think there must be another way of doing it. But like, at the minute, the way they're driving it is that something has to happen as a cost, not just of losing the belts, but within the group. I kind of feel like if they are, as characters, going to put it as so important, what are they? How are they going to react if someone drops a belt? You know, what's going to be the inner?
Well, I think that's what's exciting about NXT is that there's a lot of good matches coming up on the horizon, and there's seemingly oodles of story that you can tell with whatever permutation of winners and losers that you have coming out of it.
Yeah.
We've got a inter-office secret Santa.
Inter-office? Whose other office?
Well, intra our office.
Oh, right. No, okay.
Like, just in our office. We have a, between the personnel, inter-personnel, office-wide secret Santa.
Who have you got?
Wouldn't you like to know? Who have you got?
You know what? I was actually just going to say it. For a laugh.
I was so close to be like, it's Luke. I always have Luke in Secret Santa.
Oh, yeah, that's true. The only thing with it is, what's the limit? Is it a tenner?
Yeah.
That's too high.
I don't want to spend a tenner.
Because the problem with a tenner, basically, with Secret Santa, I think, generally speaking, whatever the limit you set is, that's what people tend to spend.
Mm-hmm.
A tenner is too much to get anything that's worth having. Sorry, it's too little to get anything worth having. but too much to spend, but too much for tat.
Yeah.
I think it should be a quid, and it should just be a pound shop Secret Santa, because there's mad stuff in Poundland that's just funny to buy people.
Yeah. I'm also in for not doing it, just as a...
But you said about anything.
Yeah, no. Well, yeah. Well, the best plans are cancelled ones, in my head.
Yes.
The notion of not doing something that everyone wants you to do is much more exciting to me than...
Is that your fetish of
doing
yours?
It? Yeah. I think my fetish is saying...
Disappointment.
No, saying no.
Yeah. It's delayed gratification, but without the gratification. It's just the delay.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. You will never, ever find satisfaction around me.
No.
You will only ever be disappointed.
Yeah.
But I, meanwhile...
will be satisfied.
Loving it.
Yeah. Tantrically from the constant disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's nice. That's Christmassy.
Well, there you go. That is Christmassy. Happy Christmas. Luke's going to have to bleep that when he edits this now. Yeah, maybe I should just clap and... why not go clap? Luke will find it. It's fine.
Well, this is when we find out if he really listens to
this,
it.
This is it. Because yeah, now there's a swear in here. And maybe he doesn't pick it up. Anyway, that's probably the
that'd
end.
That'll
be of fun. That'll be fun. Well, maybe we'll get in trouble. Who knows?
Who knows? Well, we, you.
We, me, yeah, exactly. So anyway, well, we'll find out if we get in trouble. We'll be back next week with more NXT shenanigans. See you there. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.